My God. Crazy.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is April 14th, 2015. We're going to kind of jump out of order and, well, first things, two bills, House Bill 2425, House Bill 2527, are carried over and being reposted for Monday, April 20th.
And what was the second one?
2571, I'm sorry. 2425 and 2571 are being carried over to Monday. And I'm going to jump out of order and open a work session on House Bill 2601. And call Representative Smith Warner, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2601 is sponsored by Representative Smith Warner, along with Representatives Fagan and Kenny Geyer. We have no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact on this bill. We previously had a public hearing on February 12th. We do have a proposed Dash 1 amendment before us today. And so what this bill does is it requires members of law enforcement agencies to notify OSP, the Oregon State Police, Missing Children's Clearinghouse within 24 hours of receiving a report of an abducted child. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies scenarios where members of law enforcement will notify OSP to include when they have probable cause to believe custodial interference in the first or second degree has occurred or kidnapping in the first or second degree has occurred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me back again today for this work session for House Bill 2601. As you may recall from our February public hearing, Representative Springer and Olson had some questions about specificity in the original language about exactly when, what kind of situations in which the state police could and would report this information. So we sat down. I'd like to thank Ann Wynn from my office, who worked with the chiefs of police. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, geez. Rookie mistake. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45 in Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. Plus all that stuff I said before. So Ann Wynn from my office worked with Craig Campbell and the chiefs of police and the state police to come up with the more specific language that you have in the Dash 1s. And we are happy with that. And I believe that the members of the committee who we checked in with were fine with that. So I would certainly appreciate your passage of this bill and moving it with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And are we talking about the Dash 1s? Yes. Am I on the right bill?
Yes.
Okay. And just to clarify, my concern after the last hearing was there was this reporting time frame. I think it was 24 hours. And I just simply asked, does that give law enforcement the time they need? And I was fine either way, that worked as long as it worked effectively for law enforcement. And we've had conversations, and you've assured me that it did. And I've not had law enforcement come to me with reiterating those concerns. So thank you for making sure.
My pleasure, Chair Barker and Representative Stringer. Thank you. And I was told that that Craig Campbell had hoped to join and had a conflict, but indeed was fine with this. And indeed, we did a lot of, you know, is there anything in here in which we could come up with a reason why they couldn't report it within 24 hours, and they could not. They were comfortable with that timeline, given the more detailed specificity about the actual incidents that would require that reporting timeline.
Thank you, Chairman.
I ask counsel a question.
You may.
Is there a material difference between having probable cause to believe something happened and probable cause that something happened? I mean, is the to believe?
I would say it's probably splitting hairs would be the same thing.
Having probable cause that something happened.
Cause, yeah, that something happened, or to believe that it would happen, yeah.
Well, there isn't any. I mean, it could say that a member long has probable cause that something has happened, right?
Oh. I can check into it. I don't believe there's any reason they chose that certain wording, but
we could move it like that. If there's an issue, we can
get it fixed. Poll the
audience. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Representative.
We're in work session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2601.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2601. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2601 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2601 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Smith-Farner, would you carry it for us, please? Thank you. Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3231.
So, Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3231 is sponsored by Representatives William and Noss. We have no revenue impact, and we have a fiscal light statement issued on this bill. It is ready to move. We have no amendments before us today. So current Oregon law addressing the establishment of parentage of child contains outdated language. House Bill 3231 updates the statute in a number of ways, including adding references to registered domestic partnerships, adding a new subsection to include a woman being mother of the child she gives birth to, and replacing a lot of terminology, including replacing paternity with parentage, replacing non-paternity with non-parentage, man, he with person and the person, father with parent, and so on. House Bill 3231 applies to establishments of parentage and parentage proceedings made or commenced on or after the effective date. The bill explicitly states that unit captions are provided only for reader convenience and do not become part of statutory law or express any legislative intent.
Okay, thank you. We're in work session. Oh, no, we'll have to. Okay. Close the public hearing. Open work session on House Bill 3231.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3231 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3231 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Yes.
When did we have the original hearing on this?
Right now.
Right now.
You just missed it.
No one testified?
Nobody's.
They're still working on it. That's why it's going to rules.
Okay. There is
some of the word changes give me a little concern, so I'm not going to be in favor of it now.
Okay.
Did you move to it without recommendation? Is that right?
Without recommendation. Chief.
Gotcha. Just clarify.
It was with a due pass.
No, with a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass.
Do you want to is that purposeful? We wanted to. Whatever you want, Mr. Chair. Never mind.
Yeah,
very well.
We'll move it down the rules that way. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenleaf?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
No.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3452. Representative McLean.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3452 is sponsored by Representative Widener, along with Representatives Johnson, McLean, Nierman, Smith, Stark, and Wisnant. We don't have the paperwork back on this today. We do have a proposed Dash 1 amendment before us. So the inclusion of indemnification clauses within contracts has become increasingly popular in Oregon, and in some instances, the breadth of those clauses has been problematic. So sometimes individuals signing the contracts don't understand the full extent of what they're signing and the implications it brings. House Bill 3452 prohibits indemnification by contract of the owner of a property or facilities used by a nonprofit organization providing services to youths for damages not caused by an individual participant. Additionally, the bill voids any contract provisions not in compliance. House Bill 3452 applies only to contracts entered into on or after the effective date. The bill declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The proposed Dash 1 amendment expands application to include educational providers, along with nonprofits providing services to youth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike McLean. I represent House District 55. I live in Powell Butte, and I appreciate that Representative Widener brought this bill. I think the characterization is correct, that we have a lot of private landowners providing at their generosity venues for kids to do activities, whether it's a youth camp like Young Life Camp, whether it's a riding arena for equestrian practices or events or rodeo practice. Anyway, could be lacrosse. I've seen that on private. So with all the different activities for clubs and sports, private generosity to allow the kids come on and participate is a good thing. What is common is that landowners require waivers. Now, I think where they're under Oregon law, when you allow someone to use for recreational use your property, you're limited with regards to negligence claims and the like in statute. But more common is that they're having the young folks or their parents sign waivers. That's not what this is about. Waiver is a waiver, and that's fine. I think that's a reasonable request that to have the individual participant waive liability for being there. So if they break their ankle, they fall off a horse, they can't sue the landowner. That's reasonable. What is increasingly common is the request that the kid's parents or legal guardians sign an indemnification. And indemnification, as you know, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is a radically different thing. What that says is that if I had to indemnify the chair, that I may sign a waiver and say I can't sue you, but if anyone else participating in the event sues you or something else happens that day, then I have to basically pay for your lawyer, pay for all expenses, et cetera. But what it does is create a contingent liability, and therefore it's a reporting requirement if you apply to refinance your house or on your balance sheet. Any type of gap requirements, generally accepted accounting principles, or any type of representation of federally insured institution, the question of whether a contingent liability from the identification that you signed so your kid could go to lacrosse practice, whether that has to be reported or not, is unclear, but technically it probably does. So by having these indemnification begin to appear up on uses of private venues, what we've done is we have said to parents, put up your balance sheet so your kid can participate in this activity. And by the way, for the until that statute of limitation runs or that indemnification is invalid, you now have a contingent liability because ultimately you don't know if someone else from that event is going to sue. That's problematic. I think it's unreasonable. And we, at times, as the state of Oregon, go in and just render some agreements void, or at least some provisions unenforceable. I want to at least present to this committee that this is one of those times. A waiver is a waiver. And I know the Supreme Court has just ruled on, for an example, the waiver of liability on a ski slope when you buy a ticket. All those waiver discussions have nothing to do with the indemnification discussion. And again, indemnification is a very different animal. And I think given that these things are starting to pop up, which I attribute, frankly, to lawyers, which, you know, I am one and the vice chair is one and we got several representatives who are one. So God knows I don't want to cut down on fees for lawyers. But what I am saying is that you know, if you're going to help your client be the most secure possible, an indemnification makes sense. And that's why I think these are starting to pop up. But in summary, I just say that but what it does do is I don't think people appreciate fully that by signing these indemnification, the consequence to their family in order for their child to participate in an activity. And so with that, I believe this bill, Representative Widener, the other sponsors believe that, hey, when it comes to kids and kids' activities, a parent doesn't need to put up their personal assets to identify the landowner. If, frankly, the way that's solved, if the landowner really has apprehension, is get an event insurance policy. You've got liability umbrellas You can get riders for events, for sponsoring a lacrosse event or an equestrian event or something on your property, and it operates the same way. Now, the problem is, of course, that costs some money. That's not necessarily favorable, but at the same time, having 30 individual families indemnify that landowner for an equestrian event or lacrosse event or something on private property, I'm not sure that's really a good thing either. And if I really believe, Mr. Chair, that everyone who signed these things fully understood what an indemnification was and analyzed it, and there was really a bargain for exchange of liability in those situations, it would be different. But I don't think that's what's occurring. At any event, this obviously isn't the most important bill this session. And if you don't move it, fully understand. Just wanted to be able to raise it. I do think it will be a growing concern. And I think eventually this the legislature is going to have to make a policy decision on how many families are going to be required to sign indemnifications as we see more and more private venues being offered for an expanding buffet of kids' activities. Anyway, appreciate your time.
Okay, so one of the things, thank you, Representative, one of the things that comes to mind is if I'm the landowner, I'm not going to be too interested in buying an umbrella policy for voluntarily letting a bunch of, you know, young people come right in my arena or whatever it is. And so I guess I would say, well, if you don't want to sign it, don't come right. So I mean, that's just off the top of my head without really thinking too much about that. Do you have any answer to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's exactly what does happen. Now, I bring up the insurance aspect to say that if you really wanted a belt and suspender approach, that's one way to solve it. But in fact, that does happen. I personally have knowledge of events involving horses with kids, a high school event, and where the parents who wouldn't sign the indemnification, their kids did not get to participate. And the kids whose parents did sign it did participate. Now, again, this has nothing to do with waiver.
Right.
Right.
You know, if your kid falls off the horse, something that happens to your child, boom, I understand waiving. But what I think is unreasonable is to say to a kid, you know, your parents have to basically indemnify me for everything that occurs here today in any way associated for any cost under any circumstances. That's basically turning that parent into the insurance company.
Yeah.
And just by the nature of to be able to participate in a kid's event. Now, if the reality, how it's solved is you don't have your kid participate. And I can tell you from personal experience, that's what I've done. And it isn't always something that I'm sure my daughter agreed with. But, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't going to put up my family's balance sheet for whatever could have occurred in some riding arena on that particular day.
Maybe you don't know this question because there are probably a million different policies, but I have an umbrella policy. Would that cover something like that? Would that cover the indemnification?
I doubt for an event where you have kids on and you allow people.
Right.
I imagine you'd need an event rider.
If you had an umbrella policy, would that cover your indemnification of that event?
Oh, if I did? I don't believe it would because typically it would cover my kids' negligence and it would be up to an over amount. But to actually it would not cover my particular choice to basically put up my assets to pay for attorney's fees and in any recovery of any sort of tort which might occur. And, of course, you would think nothing would happen except the creativity of the Bar Association always amazes me, and you never know what plaintiff suit could come 3-4 years down the road, perhaps.
Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Representative. Am I reading it correctly that it would be all right to force you to sign a document that indemnifies them for something that your kid did?
If
this language. This language specifically says may not require an individual participant and the owner to indemnify the owner of the property for damages not caused by the individual. So that means if the damages were caused by your kid burned the barn down, they could make you responsible for that.
Well, Thank you, Chair. Representative Greenlick, I think that's correct, because in that situation, I think you have imputed or vicarious liability at any event for your child's, even intentional tort. Now, we in statute, if I recall, Representative Barton may help me out here, throw me a lifeline, but if I recall, we cap parents' liability for intentional torts of their children, or maybe the negligent torts. At any event, having the indemnification go to your child is different than indemnifying for the entire event and all the other children that are there and every other activity. But again, I think parents ultimately have vicarious liability for their children, even for intentional torts anyway. But I don't think that's unreasonable necessarily for me to have to say, look, if my child burns down the barn, I got to I think that's in the law somewhere today, and Representative Barton would sure be grateful if you could.
No, I sure can't. I just had a comment, actually, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for bringing the bill forward and kind of picking up somewhat on Representative Greenrick's remarks. Actually, if anything, I don't think it goes far enough. I'd be interested in even going further. Not necessarily here. I don't want to. I hope we can move this bill, and I certainly don't want to disrupt it. But I think the larger issue of indemnification clauses in contracts of adhesion, which are kind of one-sided contracts, like your cell phone bill, things that there really isn't back and forth on, and is something that raises some interesting questions, particularly when it comes to pretend you've signed indemnification clauses in a contract of adhesion, and again, then you refinance your home. Have you arguably unintentionally committed some kind of mortgage fraud because you didn't report a contingent liability because the statute hasn't run? Just for example, I mean, that's an overblown point, but that's something that we should take a look at. And I think your bill as written is you obviously purposely narrowed it. It applies just to children and applies just to indemnification clauses for the acts of others. And that's reasonable, but in future sessions, I'd be interested in talking with you and see if we want to look at the bigger issue. Thank you for raising this issue, because I hadn't thought of it.
Well, Chair Barker and Representative Barton, you know, I used to be. I'm sure your wife had the same complaint, where you would read, you know, the DVD rental contract. I don't do that anymore because I just accept contracts of adhesion as part of our society. But I will say I agree with you that indemnifications in adhesion contracts or situations, like when 15-year-old daughters are saying, hey, this is equestrian club practice, I got to go, are incredibly problematic, and people don't understand the consequence. Indemnifications literally can bankrupt you. Whereas waiver of liabilities, I think everyone accepts, you know, hey, if I put this DVD in my player and it blows up my player, well, you know, I'm stuck. I can't sue the DVD supplier. But at any event, I do think it's a problem. I think in this situation, I'm just trying to basically say, hey, you know what? If we have more and more private venues offered to kids, I think that's great. I think causing parents to indemnify the landowner who makes that offer is unreasonable.
Thank you, Representative Langer.
So as another parent whose kids like to do activities in places where they like to ask for these provisions, I think it's a great bill. And I think not only is it the case that the people who sign those agreements don't necessarily know what they've just agreed to, but I think people who proffer them to be signed don't always realize the magnitude of the ask, and somehow it's become part of our kind of waiver culture that we throw this stuff in, and it's a good idea to put a foot down and say, hey, you know, that's too much. So it's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And then do you have anything you want to say about the amendment? Sorry, it's a little confused. I don't know how much that covers. Is it one person or?
Well, no, Chair Barker, all I did is I just clarified that it would apply just not just to nonprofit organizations, but to schools. And so Elsie put the language in education provider. So what it means is if it's a school event or it's a nonprofit event for youth, that's I did not narrow it as Representative Greenlick very astutely pointed out. And I – I don't think we need to. Because ultimately, I think a parent does identify as a matter of law their child at all times. Now, I think the cap issue is something we have to address in the long term, which is why I have a umbrella liability policy, because I have teenagers. But I think in the long term, the cap issue probably has to be addressed, not here.
You're fortunate to live in Oregon. A lot of states do not allow legislators to have an umbrella policy.
Oh, is that true?
That's true.
I did not know that.
Oregon has a law that says they have to insure you, which I found out when I tried to buy it, and they said you can't have it, and then I found out I couldn't. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Chair Barker. I just wanted to make perhaps an obvious point in the legislative record, and that is, to the extent we're moving this bill, which I hope we are, the legislature in this bill is looking at a very narrow thing, that is to say, indemnification clauses and contracts of adhesion with children for actions caused by others. However, and we're saying as a matter of policy that that should be unenforceable. But that's really all we're looking at. We're not talking about any other topics. And just because we're saying that this should be unenforceable really shouldn't provide any basis for a court to conclude that we are thus saying that the other things are enforceable. It shouldn't be probative of that at all. We're just looking at one narrow issue.
And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And so, committee, this bill is not ready to move today. We have it scheduled for a work session on Thursday, okay. But we could move it. We so desire today. We will be in a second.
In Chair Barker, I got put on military orders for Friday or Thursday and Friday. I have to head out for the Air National Guard. I won't be here.
That's fine. For a work session, you wouldn't need to be. We've got your testimony. In fact, we'll probably wait and discuss the amendment and get that in during the work session on Thursday.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3452 and open a work session on House Bill 2228.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 2228 is sponsored by Representatives Hoyle and Gilliam at the request of the Oregon Elder Abuse Prevention Work Group. We have no revenue impact, and we do have a fiscal statement issued on this bill for the -3 and -4 amendments that are before us today. We had a previous public hearing on this bill March 18th. My understanding is that the work group has done a lot of work on this bill since then, and that is the result of that is the -3 and -4 amendments. So House Bill 2228 creates a limited wrap back program in Oregon. It requires the Department of State Police to establish a voluntary fingerprint retention program through which OSP retains fingerprint cards and facsimiles of fingerprints received from the FBI or created during a state criminal records check for the purpose of providing to agencies and districts subscribing to the fingerprint retention program. The proposed -3 amendments clarifies language, places limits on the use of information collected as notification requirements to benefit the individuals choosing to participate, allows individuals to cancel participation in the program and outline subsequent agency requirements, and requires the Department of Administrative Services to create relevant rules. It also repeals ORS Section 181.545. Proposed -4 amendment permits the Federal Bureau of Investigations to retain fingerprint cards and records of fingerprints for the purposes described in Section 1 of the bill. This is ready to move, and it does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
3 and 4?
Go ahead. I have questions about it.
Okay. Well, do you have a question you'd like to ask now?
Yeah, well, no, I can ask it. I mean, it's a part of the discussion amendments.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move the -3 amendments into House Bill 2228.
Representative Williamson moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2228. Discussion.
Yes. As well. Could you review for me what this limits the state to do with those? It's in the -3, right? I'm sorry, I haven't seen it.
There's actually a lot of requirements. This bill has been bolstered a lot since the first time we saw it around. So it requires for those who sign up voluntarily for this program to retain those records at any point. Someone who's
voluntariness is on the part of the participant that's offering.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I can volunteer to be a part of this program. And the reason I would want to do that is because otherwise I have to go undergo background checks every 2 years. And so then what this changes as well, though, is that I can anytime say, no, thanks. They have to destroy my records and I'm out.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Okay, thank you.
I have one on four as well.
So this bill, I've really struggled with this because of the implication for federal organizing or retention of information. The fact that it's voluntary and the limitations put on the state's use of that information, I think, are really good. And I'm going to be a yes after a lot of thought on the amendments in the bill. But I do think that, you know, as ACLU pointed out, it really shows what a big problem it is, or how privacy concerns really are impacted by some of the data collection that's happening at a federal level. And so I, for one, am interested in trying to encourage our federal representatives to try to take a look at that. I know we can't control for that here in this bill or with these amendments, even with the great work that's happened, but it points to an important problem.
Just don't use your i6, your fingerprint on your i6. And AT&T has it.
That raises my question on the fours, which is, if we don't pass the fours, does that mean the federales can't keep the cards? And if that's so, how can we stop them?
So I know there was a question there, and they put a lot of work into that aspect. The way I read this, though, is it adds a lot of consistency, because the same language is there for the Department of State Police. So it makes it very clear that the only reason they're supposed to be using it are for those intended purposes, as outlined in Section 1.
But does anybody believe once the FBI gets a fingerprint, they're going to...
I think that would be a matter of...
Let's say the person opts out. The reason I have interest in this is I was involved in some of the very early ones in the health people, and it was always asserted that the FBI wouldn't keep the fingerprints, and we asked the FBI to come in and tell us, and they didn't want to talk about it. I think four pretends to do something, but unless I misread the federal constitution, we don't have much authority over telling the FBI what they can do or not.
Definitely can't speak to how the FBI would use the information.
Which makes four apparently doing something that it really doesn't do.
I would not go that far to say that either myself. It really gets into a matter. I know this was discussed a lot, and it's really clear how they outline how it is supposed to be used, and that those records are all to be destroyed when someone opts or voluntarily leaves the program.
I don't know. They say they will. I don't know what you do about
that.
So
they say the FBI says that?
That they will. That's my understanding.
And we got testimony from the FBI to that?
Representatives from the FBI, I believe, that were involved in some of the discussions. I don't know exactly what conversations they had, but I believe there were representatives involved.
Maybe we can get some testimony on that one of these days. I'd like to know what they do with the cards for everybody else as well.
We'll have a look at yours up and tell us.
I'll be a no on four.
Okay. So we have the dash threes before us. Mm-hmm. Is there any more discussion? Are there any objections to the dash threes?
That was okay. We have a motion on the dash three.
We're right. On the three.
Not the dash four.
Right. Representative Green,
the right now. Okay. Are there any objections to the dash threes? Dash threes are in.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments into House Bill 2228.
Representative Williamson moves the dash fours in House Bill 2228.
Mr. Chair, I'll be a no on the dash fours and on the bill if the dash fours come in.
Okay. Yes.
I just want to echo the sentiments of colleagues on this committee that have shared their concern with data sharing with the federal government. I think the opt-out is a good attempt at balance, and I'll be a yes on this and on the bill, but I do have reservations about sending our personal information to the FBI for any reason, really.
Okay. Call the roll of the dash four amendments, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenleck?
No.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leiniger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Fours are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2228 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2228 as amended to the floor with a due pass with subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenleck?
No.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leiniger.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson.
Aye.
Chair Barker.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2314.
All right, Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2314 came to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Judiciary for the Oregon Youth Authority. We had a public hearing on this bill on March 31st. At that time, we heard that this bill was a gut and stuff. So what we have before us is the proposed Dash 1 amendment, which completely replaces the measure. That amendment allows youth offender foster homes to be maintained by persons related to youth offender by blood or marriage under circumstances set forth by Oregon Youth Authority in rule. And just to refresh everybody's memory, currently Oregon Youth Authority did not have this flexibility, and they've found that in certain instances, in certain circumstances, it does make sense to perhaps place those youth offenders in foster homes that are related by blood or marriage. Okay. So
we need to adopt the Dash 1. All right. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2314.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2314. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2314 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2314 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
So I just have one moment. I just want to understand what this bill is. I missed it.
The
Dash 1.
The Dash 1, yeah, that is the bill.
So what that does, there is a case, they're not allowed to put people with blood relatives in foster care. Youth Authority has a case where they have a grandparent in Eastern Oregon where this would be a good fit. They just want permission to do it. They don't think they'll do it very often. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any objection,
Mr. Chair,
to the bill? So, Representative Olson will be the carrier. Opening work session, House Bill 2365.
2365.
Yep. Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2365 comes to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Judiciary for Oregon Law Commission. We received no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on this bill, so we do currently have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means that may be removed. We previously adopted the proposed Dash 3 amendments during the public hearing we had on April 7th. So this bill also was a gut and stuff. It's a result of a lot of work by a lot of folks at Oregon Law Commission. The proposed Dash 3 amendments completely replace the measure, as I mentioned. They update adoption laws with non-substantive Scrivener's changes and provide clarification and cleanup on work done during the 2013 and 2014 legislative sessions. This has been said to be mostly a housekeeping bill. Additionally, updates written certification and declaration requirements and changes some requirements of the adoption summary and adoption information statement, including adding exception to information required by the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act when the Department of Human Services or approved child caring agency placed the minor child with foster parents. It clarifies the presiding judges have access to court adoption records. Additionally, clarifies what information must be disclosed or redacted. It addresses process and fees when multiple children are adopted. It updates records requirements and adds clarification addressing readoption. And it clarifies when the Indian Child Welfare Act procedures are to be initiated.
Okay, and we have removed the referral?
Not yet. We're about to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2365 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2365 as amended to the floor with the due pass with the subsequent referral to be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson will carry. Open a work session, House Bill 2366.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2366 is a companion to House Bill 2365. It's also at the request of the House Judicial Interim Committee for the Oregon Law Commission. It's part of the same work group. It's part of the same work product. We previously had a public hearing on this bill April 7th, at which time we adopted the proposed Dash 2 amendments. So those amendments update adoption laws and provide clarification and cleanup on the work also done previously. It requires the circuit court to collect a filing fee of $255 in adoption cases under ORS Chapter 109 when a petition is filed for the purpose of commencing adoption proceedings or when any other document or other first appearance is filed in a proceeding. Then it additionally removes a $1 fee of issuance of certificates of adoption and includes cost of issuing one or more certificates of adoption under ORS 109.410 in the $255 filing fee. It provides fee exceptions when Department of Human Services consented to the adoption. So this is ready to move, and we could also remove the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Barker, I move House Bill 2366 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2366 to the floor as adopted to the floor with the due pass and removes the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We rescind it. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
I can take that.
Those two are carried over. Representative Williamson will be the carrier. And which one? We did 2601 already. Mm-hmm.
It's 2314. Not coming.
I'm sorry.
We moved that.
2314.
Yeah.
We adopted the dash one amendment on that one and moved it.
So we're on the back page now on House Bill 2612.
Use this already.
Which is not moving today, but we'll open. So we're open a work session, House Bill 2612.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2612 is sponsored by Representative Kenemer at the request of Bennett Johnson. We don't have the paperwork for this today. We do, however, have a dash one amendment before us. We previously had a public hearing on this bill on March 11th. At that time, everyone was aware that it needed some more work. So the proposed dash one amendment actually expands application to all public body defendants and removes the right to jury trial when a plaintiff only brings claims for damage to property. The proposed dash one amendment also removes the 365-day notice requirement that was contained in the intro version.
This bill, we're not planning on moving this bill.
There is some concern here, though, right?
Yes.
You know, the constitutional issue for the defendant. Yeah.
Jury trial. That's what I was going to wonder. Yeah.
So we had it. We posted it. We looked at it, reconsidered. I don't expect to move this bill. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2612. And open a work session on House Bill 2693 and see if council can keep up.
Yes. Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2693 is sponsored by Representative Gomberg at the request of the Oregon Humane Society. We have no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issue. We previously had a public hearing on this bill on March 18th. So this bill, we have no amendments before us today. It deals with the sexual assault of an animal. That is already a crime in Oregon. However, it is not a crime to encourage that sexual assault. And the purpose of this bill is to get at those involved in the industry, those that are making videos, selling videos that portray the sexual assault of an animal. So we previously heard a lot between the link between animal sexual abuse and human sexual abuse, child porn in particular, and child abuse, and the forced participation that happens in this realm. We talked about the narrow breadth of the bill and that it is construed to be constitutional, although this is a matter of first impression were it to be challenged. We did have a memo issued on the constitutionality question. I also talked to legislative counsel about that, and it was vetted very well. So again, it could be challenged, matter of first impression, but it is solid as written as that we know of. There was also a question by Representative Springer about application to if folks convicted under this new statute would then have to be undergo psychiatric evaluation, and they do not. That would only be for those actually engaging in the conduct.
They have to be on the sex offender list?
I am not sure about that.
I don't think that was in there.
Yeah, I don't believe they do.
You do if you're convicted of assaulting an animal, though.
Yeah. This is you on the farm. Not that you're doing it.
Is there some fiscal estimate of how many new people a year will be added to the prison population?
So we did that's for a different one. There was a minimal fiscal impact statement, so no statement was issued. It was minimal impact on this.
Yeah, but my question was there any estimate on how many people will be?
Yeah.
Is there any estimate on whether this will impact racially populations?
No, there is not.
We have the ability to ask for that. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
For a racial impact statement, yeah.
Yep. It takes two members mm-hmm. to ask for that.
One for each party, right?
No, it doesn't say one for each party.
Oh, just a member, right?
It just takes two members. I'll wait for that one.
Yes.
Just a quick question. Just I want to make sure. I wrote a note to myself after we talked. Is that okay?
No, yeah.
Thank you. After we had the hearing last time, I wrote a note to myself in this thing here. And maybe you could answer this, or counsel. Mm-hmm. How will this be enforced? And the second part of that was, will it turn friends into reporters?
This is a very insidious industry, obviously, but it provides law enforcement another tool to get at this kind of thing. It's very akin to what goes on already with child pornography and going after those that encourage child abuse. It's based along the same premise exactly. So it would have really similar applications.
So that was a yes or no. Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2693 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2693 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Representative Krieger.
A couple elderly people on the committee were discussing this before the committee opened. This type of conduct isn't encouraging at all.
Are there any objections?
Difficult topic area for sure.
Hearing done. So ordered. I think I'll Representative Gomberg carry it. Everybody wanted me to stick poor Representative Post, but I'm going to give him a break today. Open a work session, House Bill 2888.
Oh, that one's over.
Okay, Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2888 is sponsored by Representative Witt. We have no revenue impact and a minimal impact, fiscal impact, with no statement issue. We previously had a public hearing on this bill on March 18th. So current Oregon law contains provisions to address the abatement of nuisance activities that relate to gambling, prostitution, drugs, and so on. House Bill 2888 adds to this existing list of activities that may be addressed through civil abatement as a nuisance any place used for crimes against animals. And those crimes are listed within the bill. So types of crimes it would address would be animal fighting, breeding operations with over 50 animals, and other incidents of animal abuse, which would include the sexual assault of animals. And so we have no amendments before us today, and the bill is ready to move.
Okay, thank you. And we made it clear that this doesn't affect the normal operation of animal husbandry.
There is a very clear exemption in the bill to exclude good animal husbandry practices, and it's listed by statute. It's very clear.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2888 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2888 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Yeah, I just want to note that I'm going to vote yes on this, but it seems to me we're going to create the possibility of a neighbor getting pissed off at a neighbor for something and ending up in court without much restriction. I mean, it is clear if somebody's running a cockfighting mm-hmm. place, anybody ought to be able to get the police to come in and deal with this. I mean, this is basically having civilians doing police work.
And that is part of it, is because there is a gap in law enforcement and timeliness is so important. However, the bill is really clear that it provides it has preventions against abuse of the abatement system, and that includes judicial oversight and attorney's fees. So that's definitely one would not be in their best interest to use this as a tool to get back at their neighbor. There would be consequences.
Yeah, I just wanted to put on the record that that's a piece of mm-hmm. of this, because it's easy to get neighbor-to-neighbor problems that end up in very odd places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Representative. Did you move this already?
I did move it.
Is there any, there's a motion to move this bill to the floor. Did you pass? Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And who would like to carry that bill?
Representative Witt's bill.
Oh, Representative Witt, please. Open a work session, House Bill 3468.
All right. This is the last bill before us today, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 3468 is sponsored by Representative Williamson. We have no revenue impact, and we did receive a fiscal impact on this bill, and it does not require a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Basically, the fiscal just says that there could be cases brought using this law, and so there would be potentially a fiscal impact there. So we previously had a public hearing on this bill on March 18th, and at that time we talked a lot about the link between domestic violence and animal abuse. Multiple studies show a direct link between violence against animals and violence against humans, especially within the context of domestic violence, where abusers use animals, specifically the threat of harming an animal, as a means to achieve submission. House Bill 3468 makes it a crime of coercion when one compels or induces another person to engage in certain conduct by instilling fear that they will cause physical injury to an animal. This is ready to move.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3468 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3468 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, so ordered. Okay. You want another one?
I do.
Representative Williamson. Okay, and just I'll repeat something you said earlier on House Bill 2425 and House Bill 2571 are carried over, and it will be reposted for Monday, April 20th. No further business before the committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Before the committee, we stand adjourned.